how to sell more cars.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the How to Sell More Cars podcast. I'm your host, Terry Lancaster. Today, we've got established author Mac Zannon, five-time best-selling author Mac Zannon. Mac Zannon, he's going to talk to us about his new book, The Definitive Guide to F&I, and we were just having a conversation about car dealers, about they leave money on the table, they shoot themselves in the foot every chance they get. Mac has got five books, including The Perfect Dealership, talking about ways to manage the dealership from the top to the bottom, because he's been there, done that. He was the general manager of the largest Mitsubishi store in the nation, managed multi-rooftop operations, and now he's living the good life, writing books and soaking up the rays. Mac, how you doing, buddy?
Listen, another day in paradise. I can't complain.
So I promised everybody when I invited to this, we're going to talk about three things. We're going to talk about the F&I department, but specifically, we wanted to talk about the F&I department, how it's going to boost profits for dealerships, how it's going to increase customer satisfaction for dealerships, and the thing that appealed to my heart is that how they can increase customer retention, because Mac talks a lot about building generational wealth for the dealer and the managers and the people involved. But in order to build generational wealth, you've got to get generations of people. You got to get fathers and sons and mothers and daughters and sisters and brothers and neighbors coming back over and over and over again. Mac, tell us how the F&I department does all that.
So I'll be honest with you. You know, I wrote the first four books not about F&I. Right? F&I was part of all the books, but it wasn't the major focus. The first four books were about general management because, again, you know, from far, it seems like a very simple business, right? You buy a car low, you sell a car high, right? But it's really, really complex. It's not just that, right? A lot has to do with training, you know, with having certain values, with an ability to utilize software, marketing, everything, right? But I realized that I actually derive 100% of my income from F&I consulting. So finally, my fifth book, I decided to write about F&I. You know?
So what you're saying is you can teach an old dog new tricks.
Right, because you know it is absolutely crazy what we have happening, right? You can become a finance manager tomorrow because there is absolutely no licensing requirements. There is no educational requirements, right? It's a free-for-all, right? I'll give you an example. If you want to become a barber in New York City, you need to go through 500 hours of training. 500 hours of training.
Yeah.
Right. And if you and I want to be finance managers, we can start tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. And we at best are going to get trained by Joe, right, in the next office. And this is how bad habits transcend generations, right? Because there is absolutely no licensing or educational requirements to do the job. And same goes for general managers. Right. So, for example, NADA University for general managers. Right.
Right.
It's optional. It's not required. Yeah. It's absolutely optional. And most dealers don't take advantage of it. So the point of the book was to bring some awareness to how complex F&I is. Right. And what I mean by that is that finance department is the glue that connects the sales department and the service department. So without the finance department doing the right thing, it will be very difficult for the sales department and for the service department to achieve maximum profitability and to achieve real customer retention. And I'll give you an example. If you sell service contracts, right? And every dealer sells service contracts. So for example, if you sell service contracts and you do not offer a zero deductible for the customers that come back to you, or you do not have some kind of a mileage tie back. So for example, if the car breaks down within 25 miles of the selling dealer, the customer should go back to the selling dealer to do the repair, right? You're missing and you're leaving money on the table.
And there's so much money on the table. We one of the things one of the first things that you brought out in the book, and the book was fantastic. I come from the marketing side, and I've done training on the sales side, but I'm not an F&I guy. I've never worked in an F&I department. I don't know much about it. You did a great job of, I mean, the book is just definition of all the different things and all the things that could go wrong. But the thing that I really liked is you talked about setting up the department. And the first thing you said, what really right off the gate is your top performers, your great performers, the really good people are going to be about the great people are going to be about three times as productive as the average people. And you were a high proponent of going in, getting those people in, bringing in the best people, rewarding them appropriately so that they stick around, so that they're working 5-day weeks instead of 7-day weeks, so that they're working 8-hour days instead of 12-hour days, and they start to stick around, and happy customers create happy employees. How do you get the right people in the job? How do you keep them in the job?
So, Terry, I'm a realist, right? And we can say, yes, you can work bell to bell 7 days a week, right? You could, to a degree, right? At some point, you're going to burn out, and either your level of performance is going to go down, or you're just going to quit, right? Because the number one reason why people leave automotive retail is the spousal pressure, right? Because you're never home. You're not home on the weekends. You don't get to see your kids' plays, your kids' soccer games, right? And that's not what's happening in other industries, right? So car dealers at some point have to recognize that quality of life is the secret sauce to attracting quality employees, right? Because if you provide a normal environment with a normal schedule, right? You will have employees producing way more, right? Because they have time to do it, right? They have time to rest, and you have to reward them, right? So this is really crazy, and I see this all the time. I get a phone call from a finance manager, and he says, you know, I just got a pay cut. I never get phone calls from finance managers that says, you know what? I just got a pay raise. It's always a pay cut, right? So not only that the schedule could be a little screwed up, right? But at some point when the dealer principal sees that the finance manager is earning too much, whatever too much means,
right?
They immediately want to give him a pay cut as opposed to give him a pay raise. Sometimes, right, you have to overpay for talent because turnover is what happens when you don't, right? And turnover is extremely expensive because you have to hire a new person. While you are training that new person, they're making mistakes. And these mistakes are easily translated into dollars and cents, right? So you have to create a certain culture where people want to stick around, right? And I'll give you a good example. I know a dealer that pays a bonus to each employee for each additional years of service. So it's $1,000 a year. So if you work there for the 10th year, for example, right, around Christmas time, you get a $10,000 bonus. It's $1,000 for each year that you're employed. And it doesn't matter if you're a finance manager or a porter or a technician, that goes for all employees, right? And imagine, you know, that's really, really good. Right. These people really know the business, right? Turnover is not a factor. Customers know them. You mentioned that you need to, in order to build generational wealth, you need generations of customers. So imagine if the sales team or the service team is there for 10, 15, 20 years, They know multiple generations of people already that bought cars from them. These customers are comfortable dealing with them, you know, and for example, instead of going to Jiffy Lube, they're coming back to the service department to do the oil change, to do the regular maintenance. You know, they are buying service contracts and F&I products from the dealership as opposed to, you know, some third party that's being advertised on TV.
You can't replicate those connections. Those have to be built in, and they have to be long term. And I tell dealers all the time that if your team, if the people who work at your dealerships don't have an active, engaged social and family life outside of the dealership, you're leaving money on the table because all the money comes from outside the dealership. Yeah, that's where it has to be.
That's exactly right. And you know, you have to understand that in order for you to do a job, it's really easy to calculate how much time each task requires, right? So if it takes you half an hour to get the deal approved and get the deal funded, and then it takes you another half an hour to 45 minutes to do your presentation, to show the customer all the benefits and the features of each and every F&I product available, right? There's only so many customers each finance manager can see during the day or during a month, right? So a lot of times dealers make a mistake, and instead of hiring an additional finance manager, they overload the existing one. And when you overload an existing finance manager, they only have less time to spend with that customer. And when you have less time to spend, you have less time to sell. And that's how the PVR, you know, the dollars, you know, in profit go down.
Same happens in service,
right? With service advisors,
right?
There's only so many customers you can see as a service advisor, right? If you need to spend half an hour with a customer, right, and you work 8 hours, right, you can only see 12 customers, that's already 6 hours, right? You have an hour lunch and you have an hour to do the paperwork. So if you have a service advisor seeing 15, 20 customers a day, I promise you that instead of upselling them certain repair or maintenance work, they just become order takers. Oh, Terry, you're here for an oil change, no problem.
You said in the book that the number for finance managers is 3 to 3.5 deals a day, 80 deals a month. And I've noticed a lot more. You talked about the pay cuts. No one ever is. They're never presented as a pay cut. We're restructuring things, but it always works out to be that. And I've seen a lot more of that in the last couple of years because things are changing faster than they've ever changed before. So you change the pay structure and people leave, then you got more people doing. We have fewer people doing more deals, which means the deal takes longer. And everything I've ever seen said that the thing that people hate the most about the car business is how long it takes to buy a car. What can you put in place to speed up the deal for the customers? How can F&I move faster?
So again, it comes down to quality of your personnel, right? Are you training them? And there are two things, right, that finance managers need to do. They need to be able to read a credit bureau in order to submit the deal to the right bank and structure the deal correctly. Because their main job is to get the best possible approval for the customer, right? So what a lot of dealers do, they focus on the second part of the job, right? And the second part of the job is to upsell certain F&I products, right? And it's all great when you focus on the sales skills, but you absolutely have to focus on the first part of the job, right? You need to be proactive and teach your people how to read the credit bureau, how to speak to the credit analyst at the bank, how to understand the program that each bank has for that particular month in order for you to structure a deal that is appealing to that particular bank, right? And this is where I think where the delays happen, right? Because finance managers in many cases are not properly equipped when it comes to getting customers approved, especially if we're talking about subprime credit, right? Because anybody can get an 800 credit score approved, right? It's not hard. You just click submit and you're going to get some kind of an approval, right? But when there is, 600 or below credit score, when you have to get STIPs, you need to get proof of residence, proof of income, right? Proof of trade-in, it gets a little complicated. And, people have a bad taste in their mouth when they have to wait 4, 5, 6 hours in a showroom to see a finance manager.
Yeah, and so I'm assuming understanding that deal at the get-go eliminates some of that waiting time.
Correct.
Yeah, but that's a complicated process, and there was a trend, or at least rumblings in the automotive industry that when they're trying to fight this speed thing, that we're going to go cradle to grave. We want one person from the time they walk in the door to the time they walk out, that this person handles the deal. That may have slipped up in a little bit. I haven't seen as many dealers talking about that. Don't know as many people doing it, except for a few veteran salespeople. Cradle to grave, is it a thing? Can it be done?
It's a fantasy.
Right.
And I'll tell you why, right? You can ask any car dealer how hard it is to find a good salesperson, right? And then you can ask the same car dealer how hard it is to find a good finance manager. And then imagine finding that unicorn, right? That's going to be good at sales, good at understanding credit, good at understanding bank programs, and good at selling F&I products, all as one person, right?
Yeah.
This is a complete fantasy that never ever, right? And I'm glad you're recording it, and I like the fact that I'm going on the record saying this will never ever work.
So if you can't do cradle to grave, which cradle to grave would be great for customer satisfaction. People like having one person they trust. People like having things move faster. If cradle to grave isn't the answer for better, higher customer satisfaction and better customer retention, what is?
Listen, like anything else, you need qualified staff, right? And well-trained staff. And what I mean by well-trained staff, I'm talking about all departments, right? It doesn't make sense to have super trained, super qualified finance managers and the so-so salespeople, right? Because the so-so salespeople will slow down the process and vice versa, right? Great salespeople will sell the car quickly, but then so-so finance managers will slow down the process. So as a car dealer, and I got this expression from Brian Benstock, right? He says that the last 3 years, majority of car dealers in America were in a profit coma. And when you're in a profit coma, right, you really don't pay attention to training, right? Because money just falls from the sky. You know what I mean? So I hope that dealers are coming out of this profit coma and reinvesting the profits that they made into training their staff in every single department, right? Because don't forget, if you don't get really good service in the service department, you're never coming back to buy a car, another car from that dealership. Right. So you can't just focus on the salespeople and the finance managers, right? And ignore your service department. You need to take a 360 degree look at your operations and dedicate, resources to training each and every person in each and every department.
Each and every person. And I'm glad you mentioned Brian Benstock. Brian's Paragon Honda, one of the top Honda dealers in the country. And when you talk about training each and every person at the dealership, that includes the person running the dealership, because everything starts at the head. And if you don't have a great leader, then everything else is going to slip through the cracks. So if there's something going wrong, look to the top first off the bat. And if there's something going right, you can look to the top too.
I agree, I think training is really important, right? And you nailed it on the head, right? Because everything trickles down. So if the leader is not participating in training, then, everybody in the dealership sees that obviously it's not a priority for the leader. So why should I do? right? So if your leader is not part of the training, if your leader is not attending NADA University or sending, you know, or going to some other courses, right, or some other seminars or webinars, then, you know, employees can see that, you know, they're not blind.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. With interest rates skyrocketing right now, they're going up and maybe they're leveling off right now, but everything's going up. And we've had a trend for longer term finance packages for cars, which impacts recidivism. How do you get people back? How do you structure a deal so that you get that customer back and in the market sooner and get this generational thing that we're talking about? How do you make deals turn? How can F&I make the deals turn faster?
So when it comes to new cars, I think, you know, you really need to focus on leasing, right? Because leasing by definition is a short-term loan. Right. And it's usually 36 months, 39 months, you know, sometimes it's even 27 or 18 months. Right. So you can increase this customer turnover. Right. When it comes to financing, right, even though, listen, 96 month term is available, you're not doing any favors to your customers by putting them in a 96 month loans. Right. Because they will be so upside down. You know, when are they coming back? You know, when is this negative equity going away? Year seven? You know, you're basically turning them into last-time buyers.
Last-time right? buyers.
Right. And that's not good. That's really not good. So you have to, you know, get creative, explain the benefits of a shorter-term finance. And that's the way to do it because, listen, it's a never-ending process, right? Where today, I tell you, Terry, 96 months, and it's more or less acceptable. You know, probably next year, we'll be talking about 120-month terms, right? And this is not acceptable. I mean, just think of the finance charge that the customer will have to pay on a 120 or 96-month term.
And then you're stacking a $10,000 extra profit or whatever people were doing when the money was just falling from the sky. And those people ain't coming back in our lifetime.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So there were some dealers that actually understood that the long-term game is much more important than the short-term game. And there were dealers that refused to sell cars for more than MSRP. And they did the right things by the customers, you know. But then there were dealers that were easily charging $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 over sticker, you know. Yeah. And believe me, customers will have a long-term memory. They will not forget this.
I have completely lost my train of thought. So the customers are coming back. Leasing is what I was going to ask about. Why, if leasing gets those long-term buyers into shorter terms, what's the aversion to leasing? Is it coming from the dealers or is it coming from the consumers? I live in Nashville. Nobody leases cars in Nashville. The last time I leased a car for my daughter, I had to explain leasing to the people who worked at the dealership. You know, we were walking through the contract and I don't know anything about leasing and I was showing them how to do it because they just don't write the deals. Why not?
So I think there are two factors. There's a geographical factor. For example, Northeast is very lease oriented. You know, for example, you know, Honda stores probably in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut are averaging about, you know, between 50 and 70% lease penetration. Highline stores, you know, like Lexus, Audi, Mercedes, BMW, they're probably at 90% lease penetration in Northeast. You know, so one thing is the geographical location. And another thing is, like you said, lack of knowledge, right? When it comes to the desk, right? Because you can desk a deal and present a deal as a lease or a finance, right? And the same thing comes to finance department. When the customer was sold a car, but then finance manager explains to the customer the benefits of going into lease instead. But in order for you to do that, you need to understand how leasing works. And that brings me back to my original point. unless you spend time and money training your people to do the job, that's what happens. They don't know how to do part of it. And you are missing out on deals because don't forget, on a lease, the payment will always be lower than on a finance, right? Because you're not buying a car. You're only paying roughly for half of it, right? So you can make an appealing proposition to any customer, especially in this environment with high interest rates, that, listen, I understand you wanted to get this car and you could if we put you in a lease. This is simple math. Yeah. But again, you know, if you, you know, the problem is that a lot of dealers do what they have been doing for the last 10, 20 years, and they have no desire to change or to train. And these dealers will be losing market share to more progressive dealers.
So I've got two questions for you. It's 11:30, but I've got two more questions, and then we'll open it up. We'll see if anyone here with us has a question. But number one, I want to ask you about the future, and number two, we'll start there. Number two, you talk a lot in the book, The Definitive Guide to F&I, about the nightmares, the horror stories that can happen when you have the wrong people taking advantage of the situation and putting you in non-compliance. There's regulatory nightmares, there's financial nightmares. What's the downside of the wrong people?
So again, you see, the downside is that there is no licensing or educational requirement to get into this profession, right? So even though, you know, stupidity is not a constitutional protection, right? A lot of people can claim and say, well, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to do that, right? So again, compliance training that's available to car dealers is optional, right? And again, the progressive car dealers that want to do the right thing will take action and get their people trained. And you can get them trained through a variety of means, right? You can get compliance training from your state dealer association, you can get it from AFIP, you can get it from a company like Mosaic. You know, there are many compliance companies out there. Again, you need to be proactive about it. And if you're not, you know, you're going to get in trouble, right? Same thing goes for reinsurance, for example, right? Everybody knows the word reinsurance, but when you start speaking to dealers, nobody can really define it, right? It's like, it's a very elusive term. And unless you understand the makeup of reinsurance, you know, like the anatomy of it, you as a car dealer, as a dealer principal, might be wasting a tremendous amount of money, you know, and that elusive idea of building generational wealth goes completely out of the window, right? So on one hand, you have to make sure that your finance managers are doing the right thing, that they're selling using compliant and ethical sales techniques. And at the same time, when they sell and you take this money and you put it in your reinsurance, you want to make sure that your reinsurance setup is the right setup for your dealership, right? And unfortunately, a lot of dealers, you know, don't want to ask questions, you know, because type A personalities, you know, are not big on asking questions.
Yeah, and there are a couple of type A personalities running dealerships, that if you know, just for example. But If things go wrong, that those $200,000 fines from the state regulatory commission, that can screw up some generational wealth planning right there.
Right. And sometimes they get into millions, you know, these fines. Yeah. You know, because what happens is that when they find a violation, right, they're usually going to go on a fishing expedition to see if this is something that's happening consistently in the car dealership. So if you've been doing the wrong thing over and over again, right, you get fined for each and every offense, right? It's not a one-time deal.
Yeah.
You know?
So we're talking about generations. So let's talk about the future. And I've been saying this for so much and so long that I'm actually sick of hearing myself saying it. But the car business has changed more in the last 10 years than it changed in the last 100. And the next 10 years is going to make the last 10 years look like smooth sailing. And I've been saying that for 10 years. So what's going on in the car business for the future? How can dealers and F&I managers and salespeople, how can we prepare to be here for the long haul, to help the customer for the long haul and provide for our families?
So, you know, Terry, I'll be honest with you. I really don't see the difference in car business today, 10 years ago, and 20 years. It's the same. We have the same problems. Right, we're experiencing the same things, because if you think about it, if somebody is a 20-year veteran working in a car dealership, they've been doing the same thing for the last 20 years.
Right,
you know. So I really, you know, listen. There's a lot of software components that you can say yes. Today the business is a little different than 20 years ago because the customer can get their car appraised online. They can do this online. They can even like using a Roadster or Auto FI, you know, do the whole deal online. The problem is that nobody does it.
Right.
Right. That's the problem. People are not ready. Right. This is not buying, you know, batteries on Amazon. Right. Where you can do the whole transaction online without ever speaking to a salesperson. You know, we're talking about an average new car right now is almost $50,000. Right? People want to speak to somebody. They want to touch it, test drive it. You know, it's still a belly-to-belly business. And it will remain so for a long time. I really don't see any drastic changes, even though there are a lot of delusional OEMs out there that think that they're going to go direct to consumer. You know, Ford had this, you know, crazy idea. GM had this crazy idea, right? They can barely make a car. They have zero expertise in dealing with customers. How is GM going to take a car on trade? How is GM going to get a subprime customer approved? This is a fantasy.
Yeah.
Right. This is something that dealers do. This is the service they provide to the community, right? Because not everybody is an 800 score looking to buy a $150,000 Tesla without speaking to a salesperson, right? That's not the normal customer. That's not the normal customer profile.
Yeah.
You know. So I really don't anticipate a lot of changes. I just hope that business becomes a little more transparent, at least on the F&I side, right? Because if you go to any dealership's website, right, you can see the cars in stock, you can see the parts in stock, right? You can make a service appointment, you can appraise your trade-in. But when you click on the finance tab of that website, there's really nothing there, right? There's a credit application and maybe an article about the difference of financing versus leasing. Right. There's no information about F&I products. There's no videos. There's no brochures. There's no explanation of features and benefits. And then when the customer buys the car, we hope to put them in F&I and we expect the finance department to perform a miracle in 30 minutes. Right. And take the customer who's never heard of key replacement, paint and fabric protection, gap insurance. Right. And sell them all these products, right? This is not the way to go, right? Transparency is key.
You know, I really like one of the things that I like that you talked about in the book. You talked about those F&I products, about promoting them on the website and marketing them in the radio and TV spots, and having little signage up on the up around the store where you talk about the and people. I don't think people understand the value of planting those seeds. All you have to do is plant the seed a little early, and then, you know, an hour later when the F&I manager mentions that, the seed's already there, and you just have to move right on. That's marketing 101.
Yeah, that's merchandising. You know, and again, a lot of dealers completely dismiss merchandising when it comes to F&I, because you and I can talk about tire and wheel protection, and it's very hypothetical. It's not real, right? But if I have a bent rim in my office and a copy of the repair order showing how much it costs to replace this rim, how much it costs to get a new tire, to balance the new tire, right? Then it's a different conversation.
I'm going to open it up. Do we have any last questions for Max before I give him the last word? Max, I want to thank you for popping on the show today and telling us about your books. I've got this book, The Definitive Guide to F&I. I'm going to shoot out a copy to someone for free, because that's how I do with the books. I give them all away to spread the wealth. Max, last words for you.
Listen. Car business is incredible, right? And it can generate a lot of money for everybody involved, whether you're a salesperson, a finance manager, or a dealer principal. You know, and you can learn the hard way, or you can learn the easy way. And I hope that, you know, my books provide a path for an easier way, you know, where you don't have to make the mistakes that I have made throughout my career. And if any car dealer out there, you know, wants to talk to me, I put my phone number in every book. I put my email address in every book, you know, and I'm always available. I answer the phone. You know, it's not an answering service. It's my personal number, you know, and whatever I can do to help, you know, I'm here.
And you're on the web, maxzannon.com. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Max Zannon, you're like me. I can't owe the mafia any money, because everybody can find me if they're looking for me.
That's right.
Max, I appreciate you, buddy. Thanks for being on. And everybody be well. Take care. Go sell some cars.